Current Affairs. This is Akashvani. In the weekly program, Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on implications of US withdrawal from global bodies. The participants are Major General Sanjay Meston, Defense Analyst, and Professor Sanjay Kumar Bhardwaj, International Affairs Expert. Moderator is Tina Jha, Journalist.
The United States has announced its withdrawal from more than 60 international organizations, conventions, and treaties, many of them central to global efforts to combat climate change. This week, U.S. President Donald Trump signed a memorandum directing Washington's exit from as many as 66 international bodies, including 31 United Nations entities and 35 non-UN organizations. The list includes key climate bodies such as the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, and also the International Solar Alliance. Now, this decision represents one of the most significant rollbacks of U.S. engagement with multilateral institutions in recent years. The White House has justified the move as part of the Trump administration's America First policy framework. What does this mean for the future of global climate action and multilateral cooperation? What will be the short-term and long-term geopolitical implications of this shift? We'll discuss this and much more in this program with two eminent experts, Professor Sanjay Kumar Bhardwaj, School of International Studies, JNU, and Major General Sanjay Meston, retired. He's a noted geopolitical analyst. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us on this broadcast.
Thank you.
To the listeners of Akashvani, welcome to this program. Before we proceed with the conversation, let's listen into this report by our correspondent.
U.S. President Donald Trump announced on Wednesday the withdrawal of United States from 66 international organizations. The move comes as a part of an executive order 14199. The organizations U.S. has withdrawn from include 35 non-United Nations organizations and 31 United Nations organizations, including conventions and treaties. The reason cited for withdrawal by U.S. is that these organizations do not serve the country's interest and promote ineffective or hostile agendas. USA has also withdrawn from the International Solar Alliance. In a statement on U.S. withdrawal from the international organizations, the spokesperson for the Ministry of External Affairs, Randhir Jaiswal, said, India stands for multilateralism and believes that global issues need consultative and collaborative action by all countries. He added that since its inception, the International Solar Alliance has made significant progress in advancing its mandate to promote solar energy deployment and cooperation amongst its 125 member countries and will continue to advance its goals. Deeksha Saxena, Akashvani News, Delhi.
Let's start the program from a geopolitical context. So, General, the first question to you, your thoughts on the geopolitical implications of this sudden exit of the United States from as many as 66 organizations, treaties and conventions, which are central to various aspects of functioning of these organizations.
In the geopolitical context, let's be very clear that the prime objective of the United Nations was for global peace and stability and peace and security. That was the prime purpose. And this was formulated after the failure of the League of Nations, which was created after the First World War. And the League of Nations collapsed in 1946. Now, the purpose of the United Nations, of course, and it had large number of agencies, and now rightly you have stated that the United States has pulled out from 31 UN agencies, like
That's
Convention
right.
of Climate Framework, etc., including the United Nations for the Women, United Nations for Population. Now, these have got a significant impact. And I think in your opening remark, you made a very good statement, multilateralism. That means all the countries who are part of the United Nations, they had a voice to say whatever they wanted to and reflect their concerns. But now since the geopolitical objective, which again you stated, of the nations are changing, and in the recent past, I think in the last just 4 years, there is a total change in the geopolitical perspective because the powerful nations today have started becoming too dominant. Latest example of the United States going in for Venezuela and now threatening so many countries. Greenland, of course, and Canada, that time he stated it will be the 51st state. Similarly, Putin, Russian president, he was also very clear that he invaded Ukraine. And incidentally, both of them are powerful countries, part of the United Nations, but yet, considering their national geopolitical objectives, they have done what the whole world has seen. So if we see it in that context, in the geopolitical context, I think now the signal which the Trump administration is giving is that probably multilateralism is perhaps now going to die down over a period of time, because the whole world was talking about multilateralism. And now United Nations is again trying to regain its past glory of being the unipolar superpower in the world. And I think if you just see in the last few years, the battle is of the influence. And now if you see, Russian influence in Middle East has declined considerably. You see Syria, what happened, and even Iranian influence has declined after the decimation of Hezbollah and all these Houthis and all. So this is a global strategy between, I think, or I would say primarily by the United States. And now he's talking about the Western Hemisphere in totality. So that means he has the influence in the entire Latin American countries. And somehow the whole world, they are not doing anything against President Trump, including the Russians or the Chinese or the United Nations. So United Nations is defunct. So that is why perhaps I feel the geopolitical impact of all this is multilateralism is going to be out. And gradually, I perceive, and I have functioned in two United Nations missions in Rwanda and Mozambique, I personally feel President Trump may give another jolt. He also is likely to withdraw from the United Nations organization, because 27% of the funding of the United Nations is done by the United States.
Exactly. And in that context, how disruptive is America's withdrawal from so many organizations in one go? Professor Bhardwaj, this is something that President Donald Trump had been talking about. In fact, he withdrew from the Paris Agreement, and he had been saying that why should America fund so many organizations which no longer cater to America's interests? But now to pull out from as many as 66 organizations, 31 UN entities, how disruptive is it for the multilateral framework? From an institutional standpoint, if you could explain.
Let me put in this way that, like, United Nations regular budget is around 3.45 billion for the political, humanitarian, economic, disarmament, and for communitarian developments. These are basically being a member of the United States, and any country, any member has to contribute accordingly. Whatever that United States is contributing more. But there are also a number of agencies where the United States is withdrawing now. Is they are contributing voluntarily for these things. But what is most important point is that in the last decade, I would say, the state has become revisionist. They are basically, if you will see, when there were negative liberalism, when laissez-faire was there, and then a New Deal has come, and then the positive liberalism, where welfarist state has come out. But in 1980s, that the neoliberalist ideology, particularly while Margaret Thatcher was the British PM and Ronald Reagan was the American president. Thatcher was much influenced by a scholar that is known as Hayek. And Hayek has impressed to adopt a free and open market economy, basically. And that free and market economy has led the world towards the globalization. And this globalization had basically moved and forced the state to respect and to have more multilateral institutions. And multilateralism, more in economic cooperation, all these had happened over the years. So that these two states, the United States and the Britain, UK, they were instrumental of advancing the international institutionalism, globalization, and you can also say that the number of other international, particularly the economic corporations and institutions has come out. But you will see in the last, as I said, that the state has become revisionist. Or I would say the state has become more protectionist today. And the world has started dividing on one, of course, is the West versus rest in political, geopolitical context. The another, you can say that the state has aligning and realigning, looking in different context, either the military alliance or the economic alliance had happened. But what happened, the globalization has benefited to others, the rest, not the West. And who are the pioneer of this globalization and institutionalism, where the UN, where the other WTO and WHO and all these institutions has been. So American had started thinking about deglobalization themselves, and also not going with the international institutions and respecting international institutions like the UN and like WHO. I'm coming on the point where it has been known that WHO, you see the two incidents are very important contributing. One is the COVID-19. There, the state has to take care of their own people. The international institutions has been not considered as constructive, as global or universal as it is. So every state has to take care of their own people, vaccine, protection and providing. The second is the Ukraine-Russia war, where the Ukraine has to protect whatever the support is taking care, but has to protect their territorial integrity and sovereignty by themselves. The supports and NATO, their interest is there. But Ukraine is alone fighting with the other logistics. So it has questioned the UN, what the UN is doing, UN Security Council is doing. And I think from there, the new debate and new alignment and new policies has come out. And the system has become more self-help system. The state has become protectionist and they are confining and becoming more protectionist themselves. And in this protectionist approach, the Americans, they have come out starting withdrawing from the international institutions.
However, Professor, the question is, perhaps these institutions have not evolved in the manner that the world has. And India also has been calling for reforms of these institutions. But the question is, when these institutions were established, they were established under the assumption that America would be a member throughout, not because it was perhaps one of the biggest funders, but also because it provided technical expertise. Now, when a country as powerful as America withdraws in one go from so many institutions, treaties and conventions, how does it make these organizations structurally vulnerable?
No, they have already become vulnerable. Why the UN has lost its relevance? While the WTO and other institutions has lost their relevance, while the WHO, health organization, has lost its relevance, could not provide. And the West has realized that the, like Chinese, were the most beneficiaries of these international institutions. Wherever they wanted to use, they used for their own way. And whenever they said that, no, no, we don't believe in the liberal democratic system, international institutionalism and all Chinese. So this has forced these countries to withdraw from these international institutions. And you can see the Americans, that's why I'm coming with the policies, the Americans, they have come out with these, you correctly mentioned, about 66 organizations. These are 35 non-UN organizations and 31 is the UN entities, basically. So they are withdrawing, but what is most suffering and what it has lost the relevance, because it talks about the humanitarian concerns, it's talked about the human-centric developments, not the state-centric developments. In this, the major issues of global commons were climate change, green and clean energy, health, food security. So global commons and global goods had suffered. And who will suffer from this global commons and global goods? The rest, the developing countries like India. And India, being a voice of the global south, though had strongly started talking and initiating about this clean energy, like International Solar Alliance, where Americans withdraw, Paris Agreements.
When you have one of the largest historical emitters withdraw from a collective framework, how does it impact the global climate governance? Climate mitigation adaptation is perhaps one of the biggest concerns that the world is facing. And when you have a country like the United States withdraw from any sort of collective framework where one is not just making a roadmap, but also seeking implementation and accountability from these countries, you have the major emitter missing out and not participating at all.
Yeah, very true. See, what is happening is the United States is pulling out. I personally feel that a lot of things will be impacted. Firstly, you have rightly stated about the climate part. Climate is such a thing where all nations have to be on board. And if you have recently seen the statement of President Trump, even in the United Nations General Assembly, I think there also he was very, very clear that we are not interested in climate, etc. And it does not make much of a issue. And therefore, he was talking about even, you know, China and India and other countries, you know, that we are doing so much of emissions. But the problem is, it is, a broader policy of the United States to get out from this UN. And why? Because firstly, it wants to show itself that it is a unipolar and the most superpower country in the world. Number two, it is eradicating gradually the influence of Russia and China everywhere. You have seen what I just mentioned about Syria and now what is happening in Latin America. I think the policies are very clear. Third is, if you see the United Nations peacekeeping force, as on date, there are a large number of missions going around. Now, whether it will give impetus to conflicts or whether the conflict may go on their own, I think the issue is United Nations. See, I functioned in two missions. Now, let me tell you the practical parts of it. United Nations is a monster. It's a huge organization. Many people are working in that. What is happening is that the United States is actually aware there is corruption. There is no doubt. The UN money is not reaching correctly to the people. And that is why, even if you see US aid had suddenly stopped, stopped after President Trump, the moment he took over. So all this is leading to a lot of things is that firstly, there is corruption, there is mismanagement. Why today from particular countries, like I'm aware about the selection process, they give some QRs. If you have to be deployed in, for example, in Congo, they just give a term of reference, the military general who will be commanding should be knowing French. Now, where is this? This is not when accepted norm are that there are 5 UN international languages accepted, including English. Then why give this? So it is just because the UN Secretary General that time was from France. So all these kind of things are happening. So perhaps the United States has realized that these organizations have literally become, harsh word maybe, literally some to some extent defunct.
Okay, so multiple factors could be behind why the Trump administration has gone for this move. But do you think this could, in a way, lead to more smaller coalitions which are issue-based? India has, of course, advocated for these issue-based coalitions. We are part of a lot of these coalitions where in some we are in leadership positions, where in some we are the beneficiaries. But when a country like the United States withdraws from collective frameworks, which are the multilateral institutions, it could lead to smaller issue-based coalitions in different parts of the world on different issues.
Very true. Smaller coalitions are possible and likelihood is there. For example, now if you see, there is a talk about BRICS. But will BRICS also be a reality in terms of currency, particular BRIC currency? I doubt, because India and China can never be on the same platform. We have such differences. Even today, NATO, the kind of West alignment which was there, you have seen President Trump, he pushed forth for funding for the Ukraine war for the European nations. And today he is also talking about Greenland. So he is not worried even about NATO. And he also rightly pointed about that India is, you know, the global South leader. But the fact of the matter is, all these institutions, whether it is small coalitions, small grouping, they require one thing, and that is funding. And then the convergence of the geopolitical interest vis-a-vis your national interest. So these are things, for imagine today, BRICS, can they converge on so many things in our area? No, not at all. Because Russia has its own interest, China has its own interest, India has its own interest. So convergence of many people, unlike it had happened, especially after the Second World War, because Europe and of course America, they had a lot of convergence. And yet if you see, United Nations has also has got lot of, I would say, terms of reference. Why should today, if everyone is equal, why should 5 permanent members be only deciding on the UN Security Council resolutions? Now they say, because they are funding it, first funder is the United States and the second funder is of course China. And third is Japan. Now Japan is not a permanent member of the United Security Council. So these are a lot of things. So I personally feel the way Trump is going on, perhaps the UN may get defunct over a period of time gradually. These are all symptoms. He started with USAID, now he's come with these 31 institutions. And at the same time, perhaps countries like India will have to think of some alignment. But
I'll come to how India perhaps could fill that vacuum. But before that, Professor, all of these institutions now going forth will have to reform their funding models. But what will be the immediate impact on some of these smaller countries or the developing countries which have for a long time depended on these institutions for, of course, money, but technology transfer, capacity building? There are a whole range of aspects. How in the long run will these developing countries now cope up with the withdrawal of America from these very, very important conventions we've had for so many years and the agreements and the institutions?
The two debates are going on. One is the universalism versus alternativism. Alternativism is basically that global South is creating an alternative discourse. What you talk, developing its own fund, developing its own currency, developing its own banks and funding institutions and all that. So in this debate, basically that egalitarianism and the libertarianism, where the global South talks about the egalitarianism on the issue of climate change, everybody share the equal burden. But what is the most significant consequences of these while the international institutions losing its relevance? One. Second, while the Americans are withdrawing or a global North is less interested, I think that what most affected issues will be the climate change and the global warming. One is issue is that. Second issue, that who will address these, the issue of sustainable peace. You need a sustainable peace, and that sustainable peace is basically removing the structural violence that is more in the global South. The third is very important, is the promotion of democracy. Who will take care? Because third world countries, most of them are undemocratic. And they are making China as a role model, then it is also a problem. So India is emerging as an alternative voice, as a voice of Global South, promoting democracy, promoting sustainable peace, promoting dialogues, law-abiding systems. But the Chinese are also there. How they will? The most important issues where these international institutions were helping were the issue of migration and labor issues. They are conflicting. The issues of women and gender equality, the issues of child and their protections. You know, a number of issues had now will suffer that when we will lose the relevance of international institutions. I think this need to be taken care by the Global South very strongly, very constructively, very unitedly. But there you need to have a very democratic approach, because the world has been discriminatory in a way. Either on the nuclear issues, on the issue of democracy, on the issues of human rights, and the number of issues.
India has emerged as the voice of the Global South. We've tried to bring to the table those who had been underrepresented for so many decades, General Mestin. Now, with America withdrawing, do you see India assuming that leadership role? It's an opportunity for our country. We always see opportunity in crisis. There's an opportunity for India to perhaps push what we stand for, that the world is one family. In fact, we chaired our G20 with the tagline Vasudhaiv Kutumbakam.
Very true. See, India has got a lot of opportunities and we can think about it. But the underlying factor are two. One is, of course, who funds these organizations, even if India today takes a lead, because everyone, finally, it comes down to funding. Number two is the geopolitical interest of each nation. What are their interests? So there is a conflict always there. For example, today, just take a small thing like SAARC. It's not been successful. Because we have so many hostile neighbors within us. Now let's assume even about the Global South. Let's assume African countries, Latin American countries. Yes, there may be some convergence. But when it comes to main geopolitical convergence, everyone will have divergence views. See, why UN was successful to some extent, I would not say it was always successful. See, Cold War continued. And why the Cold War continued? Finally, the battle was between erstwhile USSR and the West. And what was the alignment of the West and the Americans? The only alignment was that they were fighting now, during Cold War era, against communism. And their thing was more focused on liberalism and democracy. So there was some geopolitical convergence. Now in case for India to take a lead, we have to find partners who can have such convergence of interest, which I think is not easy even in Global South. Because you see, Africa has their own thought process. So national interest and convergence of geopolitical interest of few nations is something which can get these small organizations together, and of course the funding part of it.
But especially in areas of climate and development priorities, where, you know, as much as India needs the Global South, where do you think India needs to now calibrate its approach in dealing with these countries where there will be vacuum and which will see immediate implications of America's withdrawal from these organizations?
So it is true what he said, that Global South is more divided and more conflicting. And the Global North is taking benefits and advantage of these divisions. I think that issue like climate justice, where we talked about $1 trillion budget has to be collected for the climate justice, and Global North was asked to do it. Withdrawing from the institutions like the International Panel on Climate Change, UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and most important, like the International Trade Center, International Law Commission, you can say International Energy Forum, and then most important, I can say that Global Counterterrorism Forum. These are very important issues. I think that India had been advocating thoroughly in different platforms, either in the G20 or in other UN platforms and wherever it is getting a point. I think India, where had been advocating about the global international solar alliance, Modiji had everywhere talks about let's have green and clean energy, and that how let's have a human-centric development and let's have a sustainable peace. So I think that India is basically generating or constructing an approach of the Global South where all the countries of the Global South would be on the convergence, or you can say on one platform, advocate about these critical issues of global commons and global goods. And I think India had given a very good beginning while we had organized hosted the G20 summit. And that has been widely accepted and I think had been offered number of times on number of conflicting issues, let India come and take the leads. And our voice was that it is a country of Gautam Buddha. We talked about non-violence. It is a country of Mahatma Gandhi. And we do not believe in the war. It is a time for the sustainable peace and development. So I think India is constructing and providing a platform to the countries who will be most affected by withdrawal of the global north from the international institutions. So I think when the global south will find a uniform approach or a conversion of their interests, they will strongly put their voice against the global north, and they have to rethink and they have to relook what they are damaging these international institutions like the UN. India had been talking, the UN Security Council need to be democratized. We have also been talking about many other forums like the nuclear supplier group, and we have been talking about the use of nuclear energy for the civilian purpose. We are very carefully working about the welfare of the humanity. We are not talking about the state-centric approach to for the human, what we will say, that manav kalyan.
That's true. So this decision may be guided by America first, but it's a huge setback to the consensus-driven reforms that India has advocated and the belief that we had in multilateral institutions. For a country like India, which is emerging, which has set a goal of becoming a Viksit Bharat by 2047, how should we now protect our strategic interests in the wake of fragmentation, the complexities in the geopolitical scenario, and at a time when we see the world going back to the post-Second World War scenario, where perhaps unilateralism ruled the order of the day?
A very good question. How should India protect its interest? I would say, number one, let's identify what are the threats to us. Those threats itself are very, very clear. One is the external threat, which we always keep talking about. And the most important threat today, of course, is China and Pakistan, their collusivity, and also now the tariffs which is being imposed by President Trump and his alignment now with Pakistan. Another biggest threat is, today we are talking about the United Nations. I think one of the biggest failures of the United Nations has been that till date there is no definition of terrorism. Someone says my terrorist is a freedom fighter, and those are the kind of things. And India is today going to be impacted by this, and we have seen what happened even Pahalgam. So therefore, what India does, I think the message is very, very clear. India today has to focus exactly the way Trump is doing. Number one, we have to be a solid economic power. Number two, we have to be the most potent military power in this world. We should aim for that. And to that extent, how we can do that? When a strong economy gives a strong military, and therefore we have to be self-reliant on Atmanirbhar Bharat. That concept continues. And fourth is, we have to today look for, you know, all said and done, we require chips, etc. Today you see the why President Trump has been little softer with China, because of the control of the rare earth minerals. What China has 70%. Why today can't India start exploring rare earth minerals? And we have places. In our own country we have, of course we are doing. But more than that, today Afghanistan offers us so much. It's got $4.1 trillion of mineral reserves. India, today if we are talking to Taliban, and it is high time, because before China ventures in there also, we must go in for rare earth minerals, mining, etc. The Taliban today will look after the Indian security, and we can also look after our own security interests. And also, it will be a pincer, or I would say a pressure on Pakistan from the West. The way today Munir is doing, he has sided now with Trump, he has sided with Xi Jinping, and you know, I think very successfully he's got these two superpowers. So I think India has to now be very, very clear. We have to have a strategic calculus and take firm decisions in the national interest.
We have to strengthen our indigenous capabilities, and that will take us much closer and scale up our efforts towards our Viksit Bharat vision. With that, we'll have to wrap up this conversation. Thank you once again, Professor Bhardwaj, General Meston, for this very engaging and insightful conversation. And to you listeners, thank you very much for your time as well.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on implications of U.S. withdrawal from global bodies. The participants were Major General Sanjay Meston, Defense Analyst, and Professor Sanjay Kumar Bhardwaj, International Affairs Expert. The moderator was Tina Jha, Journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashwani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program will also be available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 928-909-4044.
Current Affairs.